T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
A lot of chatter right now on our Twitter at 929 The Game in regards to Robert Alford. Welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 929 The Game, because the Falcons have cut him and he is free to go and apply his trade anywhere else but Atlanta at the moment. So the Falcons and Robert Alford have parted ways. So a lot to discuss in this and some of the belief about the Falcons here as they go towards this next season, because, you know, Hugh, as they do this, we've seen them, they already parted with their offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, their special teams coordinator, a tight end coach. They brought in a new guy, Dan Quinn's taking over the defense. Massive change of the coaching staff. And now this begins what we think could be not massive, but big changes on the player personnel side with Robert Alford being cut. I guess to me, and I'm curious about you, this is not a rebuild. This is not panic. To me, this is they have no other option, given what happened last year, than to execute a big, bold plan, and this is what they're doing. It's either going to work magically or it's going to not work magically. I guess, you know, here's what we're going to find out.
I know you don't like to use the word rebuild, but what would you call it? I mean, you're changing a lot. I mean, you're changing a lot with saying that you're not changing a lot. You're changing the way the defense is going to probably be structured and called, because mm-hmm. Coach Quinn has taken over the defense.
Correct.
You're changing some of the personnel on the field. Mm-hmm. A retooling, because I know people hate that word rebuild. Rebuild is like the worst thing that you can say about any franchise, professional franchise. You hate to use that word, but that's what it is, John. It's a retooling. Like, you're going to have some core components that are still going to be there. But this is a retooling. This is a rebuilding.
You know,
a revamping. Uh-huh. It's all the same thing, because you're revamping the defense.
Because Vegas and some of the big websites like, you know, Bleacher Report and SI, CBS, ESPN, kind of think that the Falcons are hot garbage. Right now they have them in the second half, in the lower half of the NFL, for their way too early predictions for 2019. I mean, they're down there at the same Super Bowl odds with teams like the New York Giants and Jacksonville. And so, I mean, that's kind of what Vegas thinks of them at the moment. Now, I don't want – here I get clouded. I look at this, and this is where my fandom gets in the way of my judgment, and I openly admit it. I look at the Falcons and say, they're still a pretty darn good football team.
Yeah, I would agree. But there's a lot of changes. There's some unknowns to a certain extent with Coach Quinn taking over the defense. Still haven't had the draft. I think that's why when you have these way too early predictions, I think they're ridiculous. And it's a little irritating, because it's like, how do you know? Like, you're going off of the team and the way it was constructed last year, and you're not even factoring in free agent moves that potentially could be made, or rookies that will be on the team. You're not factoring in any of that. But this is what we do. As media pundits, this is what we do. We go out and this gives us something to talk about. Now, I don't think the Falcons are going to be hot garbage. I don't think that's going to be the case. But you can make an argument where they have to revamp that offensive line. They have to do a better job of protecting their assets, because they didn't do that last year. Matt Ryan is their biggest asset that they have on this football team. Didn't do a good job of protecting him. So that's something that is a huge concern. Didn't run the ball well. Was in the lower half, the lower tier of the teams that ran the ball last year. I think they were like 30 or 32, something like that. They were at the bottom when it came to running the football. So that's something that you're going to have to look at. You're also looking at the fact that your running back is coming off a lot of injuries. And what are you going to do at that position? Now, Ito Smith looked like he could be a good two-punch with Devontae Freeman being number one. But will he be able to carry the load of transitional back, a back that's going to, you know, be out there in transition? Will he be able to do that?
Well, so there's only, a lot of questions. My only problem with that is, and to that specific thing, is that Devontae Freeman went healthy and Ito Smith kind of the same back.
You know, a little bit. So, yeah, there's a lot of questions about this offense. And how much is it going to change with Dirk Carter being here.
Mm-hmm.
How much is that going to change? Because, you know, with Dirk, it seems to me like, you know, might want to run the ball a little bit more. Might want to be a little bit more emphasis on the run. So that might be a bigger running back.
And where does Brian Hill play into this?
Yeah, all of that.
Is Tevin Coleman going to be picked up by somebody else? We assume so. To Vic Beasley, because you said something that I think is really – this is the key point. When you're discussing at work today about, you know, Alford's gone, Beasley ought to be gone. The Hughes said something that I want to go to because – and this is why we're going to lean on him a little bit because of this position. Hugh, I'm going to ask you two or three different questions about Vic. I want to go back to 15 and a half sacks in 2016 and to what he did last year, which was almost nothing. I think about four sacks, something like that, four or five. What happened? I mean, he was a healthy non-factor last year. Now, in between, in 2016, he had 15 and a half sacks. In 2017, we know that they asked him to drop back and play as a kind of a, you know, a hybrid end slash outside linebacker. He had additional duties in 2017, covering backs in the flat, covering tight ends and whatnot. He wasn't simply rushing the passer. In 2018, ostensibly, they were going to get back to what he was in 2016 by putting his hand in the dirt and making him a rush end. But he was never able to get back to the effectiveness of 2016. The question is, why?
You know, again, I had to refer to my man, the bunker mentality. I was listening to his show last night, and he was saying something that made a lot of sense. When Vic's production went down, his numbers went up. They said, like, when he was playing, like, 53% of the snaps, that he had four sacks. And when he was at, like, 70% of the snaps, he only had, like, one in the first half of the season.
All right,
so maybe that's it. Maybe he's out there. But this, I will say this to that, is that Coach Quinn does a good job of spelling guys. Now, granted, there were some guys that got hurt early on that might have skewed the snap counts a little bit.
Because
I know Brooks Reed had to play a whole lot more than he was anticipated to play early in the season. But, like, as a professional, I feel like you should be conditioned for that, especially when you're not going to be out there that long. They do a great job of two platooning. And it's one of those things where I feel like you should be conditioned to go out there and play a few more snaps if you have to. That's just my feeling. So, you know, I don't know. I know it's a different era and that than the one that I played in. And it's, you know, they're two platoon a lot, but you should be able to be productive whenever you're out there on the field, in my eyes, especially when you know it's a passing down.
All right, so there's that. And then there's the unknown factor here in the decision of whether or not to keep Vic Beasley, cut Vic Beasley, do whatever you're going to do with him in terms of how he fits into the new team. We have in this team, on this team, for the third time under Dan Quinn, a new defensive coordinator, and that is Dan Quinn. How Dan Quinn envisions him being used is going to be the determining factor. Not just of course, Dan's going to know what Vic can and cannot do. We may see them do some different things on defense. We may see them blitz more. We may see them go to single high safety. I don't know what they're going to do. They may change the defense a little bit. And, you know, they may alter it some fashion.
This is going to be interesting because I look at it like this. Coach Quinn has brought in on three different occasions, well, this being the third, himself, guys that he has handpicked to run this defense. And they have, from what we've been told from Coach Quinn, is that they run the defense the way that he wants it run. How much is this defense going to change? That would be my question. And what exactly wasn't being done that made you make this change? Again, not trying to, you know, poke holes in Coach Quinn's defensive prowess or anything like that, but it's a question that needs to be asked, John. I mean, because you look at the first defense coordinator I had, then you bring in Marquand Manuel, Coach Manuel, and we heard about how Coach Manuel was the right hand of Coach Quinn. Coach Manuel, to me personally, did one hell of a job coaching a team that was decimated with injuries straight up the middle. You're talking about from the defensive line, your linebackers to your secondary. Did a hell of a job piecemealing this thing together. And he lost his job. So what's going to be the difference? What is the difference? I can't wait to see what that looks like.
Right. This is why we can't really know what the plan is and how you envision Vic Beasley working into this. I mean, you're left to guess and speculate here. Will Dan Quinn, for example, adopt a defense that will be – far more aggressive in terms of blitzing and stunting? Will he, we don't know yet. And so as a result, whatever Dan Quinn decides to do with now his defense, because he's going to be making the defensive calls, is how he envisions Vic Beasley either fitting or not fitting into that defense, and that's where the decision on Vic will come. Could they cut Vic Beasley? Absolutely. Could they keep Vic Beasley? Absolutely. Could they restructure Vic Beasley and offer him a contract? Yes, they could. I would not do that. I'd either keep him and use him this year and see if he can play, or I'd flat cut him. One of the two.
It's going to be interesting to see how they handle that, John, because that's a lot of money to pay for 5 sacks. That's a lot of money. I wish somebody would pay me. I had 3 my last year in the league. Nobody wanted to pay me. Pay me $13 million. I get 3 sacks. Right now. Right now. Playing the way that they're playing right now, I'll try to give you 3.
And then the Falcons are going to be reworking a lot of stuff. This offseason, Thomas Dimitroff promised it was going to be busy. We're talking about the Falcons and the fact that they cut Rocky Alford last night. No, I do not see them making a move necessarily in the draft for a cornerback, at least not in the first round of the draft. I know that some Georgia fans immediately jumped on Twitter and started screaming DeAndre Baker. But I just think that, with this draft, depending on where Kyler Murray goes, if Kyler, one of the good things is we'll know about Kyler Murray in about a week. Because
Kyler Murray, I don't think Kyler Murray going to be no first round draft pick.
The Oakland A's.
They're talking that. Yeah, I don't think. Even if he came in the NFL draft, I don't think he'd be a first round draft pick.
I've seen him, and it's so funny, Hugh, you say that because I tend to agree with you, but I have seen him on these mock draft projections go anywhere from 29 in the first round to not in the first round to as high as number 3.
You still believe in those mock drafts, John? After all these years where we've looked at mock drafts, and there's been guys that have been drafted and not been drafted per those mock drafts.
Yeah, the only thing you know for certain is the number one pick. Usually.
That's it. Probably 1 or 2. It's a crapshoot.
It's a crapshoot.
Didn't
right.
Joey Bosa go higher than everybody anticipated him to go?
Yep. And well, look what he did.
And he threw – but the point is this. Nobody had Joey Bosa going as high as he did.
Right.
So I look at mock drafts outside of the number 1 and 2 picks. Ain't no telling who's gonna go where.
Yeah, right, it is no telling. I mean, it's Cliff Kingsbury. Nick Bosa, Joey's younger brother, who is, by all accounts, the better player. I would say that when he was healthy at Ohio State, he was the better player than Joey. That's how good Nick Bosa was. And could be, after he missed pretty much the entirety of the season last year. But if he bounces back from this injury, Nick Bosa will be the number one pick in the NFL draft, and you can't go wrong. I mean, he's J.J. Watt. Nick Bosa is all over the place. He is a game changer for the Cardinals defense. But you've got a coach in Cliff Kingsbury, and who knows? The Cliff Kingsbury doesn't like Josh Rosen, wants to trade him. He's in love with Kyler Murray. Who the hell knows, right? I mean, so you can never quite tell, especially when you get new coaches in, what's going to happen in the draft. Having said that, I think that the Falcons are content to stay at 14, Hugh. Yes, Thomas Dimitroff said they could move up if they wanted to, but they have I'm guessing here, they have 2 to 3 defensive tackles, okay? Rashawn Gary, Ed Oliver, they have 2 or 3 that are in that ballpark right there, and they have targeted those guys to be part of this team. That's my guess.
But it's one of those things where it's going to have to be the ebb and flow. And the one thing that I know a little bit about the draft is that they're looking – in order to figure out who will potentially be there, you kind of have to read the tea leaves and figure out who could potentially go in front of you. Mm-hmm. So they're going to look at when they do their big boards, they're going to have their draft needs and they're going to have the needs of all 31 other teams out there. And they're going to have draft boards where they're going to have so many different scenarios of how this thing can play out. And so, but they're going to go by certain teams' immediate needs. And they're going to then pick it from there. Like they might say, just off the top of my head, whoever's drafted in front of them, say the Cleveland Browns. Hey, the Cleveland Browns might be looking for an offensive lineman. And they might say, well, we know that there's going to be some defensive lineman there, so that we know Cleveland's not picking off a defensive lineman, so we're good as far as that's concerned. But it might be 4 teams in front of them that might be looking at a D tackle. And they might look and say, well, dang, our guy is rated. He's the number 1 rated D tackle, so he might not be there. Here's the number 2 rated D tackle, but these other teams, they need D tackles as well, and this team might pick the D tackle that's number 1 rated, so they have to go from there. This is a whole drawn-out process. I had a chance to look into the war room one time for the Philadelphia Eagles. Man, that's a lot of work. Like, mm-hmm. they're probably there every day looking at different draft scenarios, on the phone, talking to different folks, trying to get as much information as they possibly can about these young men that are potentially going to get drafted next
month.
Yeah,
so we're going to be standing by for news in terms of the Falcons offseason here, but we saw how big and bold it was that they did. I think we were all a little surprised how big and bold they were. In hindsight, maybe we understand it, but when they made the move to go get the coaching staff right, at least for next year, this wasn't a, you know, around the edges kind of thing. You know, would they fire Sark? Would they keep Sark? They ended up getting rid of Sark and Manuel and Armstrong. And when they went bang, bang, bang and got rid of all three of their coordinators, we all went, whoa, okay, this is serious. Now, they didn't make those bold moves, getting rid of Sark, Manuel, and Armstrong, to sit around on their hands when it came to player personnel. They're going to sign Grady. They're going to sign Julio. And stop with this, Julio's not going to be on the team thing. They're going to sign Grady. They're going to sign Julio. They've cut Rocky Alford, and they are not done yet. They're going to be reworking deals. Other players are going to get cut. Oh, by the way, you should know, one other little Falcons note here. Matt Bryant is coming back for his 18th NFL season. He released that on Twitter last night. He says, I'm coming back. I'm healthy, and I'm coming back. So you're set. You're set there. We're all glad that Matt Bryant's coming back for another year. Going to be some drama at Flowery Branch. Not the only place there's going to be drama in the offseason of the NFL. There's some drama in Philadelphia right now.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now streaming anywhere on Radio.com and the Radio.com app.
We are killing it online.
Stay up to date with Atlanta sports no matter where you go. Streaming live now at Radio.com and the Radio.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You really thought after the Super Bowl wasn't going to be nothing to talk about in the National Football League. Oh, man, come on. Man. Non-stop fun. Welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh, the whole fam damnly here as we get ready for all this offseason news. We talk about Rocky Alford, and we'll certainly discuss that throughout the day, and you can jump into our Twitter. A lot of discussion about what the Falcons are doing on our Twitter, at 929 The Game. A lot of fun stuff to chat up this morning. After Alford got let go. In Philadelphia, they have a little bit of drama, and they have a conundrum. What to do with Nick Foles? So this is what happened. Hugh, the Eagles picked up the option on Nick Foles' final year. Nick immediately turns around and voids the deal, and Nick pays the Eagles back $2 million out of his own pocket to void the deal to become a free agent. Now, what do the Eagles do? They can just let him walk. Or they can tag him and trade him. But if they tag him, Hugh, $25 million.
Yeah, I think Nick Foles is being a smart man in this situation. He knows whether or not he plays well moving forward that there are going to be teams that are willing to make him a high-paid individual. And what he's done for the city of Philadelphia, he's kind of put the Eagles over a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, John, like some of that money, he only technically only had to give back $1 million because when they gave him $1 million for those incentives that he had in the playoffs, he can kind of break even with that a little bit. So he's only really technically giving up $1 million because they showed him some good faith and gave him $1 million, even though he kind of fell short. This is one thing where for Eagles fans, I'm pretty sure they're going through it right now because he was a great security blanket. And with Carson Wentz in the last couple of seasons being banged up in key moments during the season, He was one of those blankets that, you know, people felt real comfortable with. So comfortable that they got him a Super Bowl win. So it's going to be tough. Nick's gonna make a killing. He's probably going to go somewhere else and play.
Yeah, there are multiple things here. I mean, I just don't see how the Eagles can tag him. Not at $25 million. I mean, you can't do that. Well, what if there's no trade to be had? What if nobody decides?
Great move.
You know,
Great chess move by Nick Foles, though. I mean, big time. You know, because I get – you know what's funny? And teams do this a lot. They bank on the fact that you love the city so much and you love the people that you won't want to leave. But you have to think about it. You have to think about it in terms of you have to do what's best for you and your family. And I know that there's some in the car right now saying, well, what's the difference between $2 million and $6 million? And I say to that person, $4 million?
Yeah, right.
But some people look at it like that. Some people look at it like that. And you know, Nick's not looking at it like that. Nick did something for the city of Philadelphia that has never been done since the Chuck Bednarik era, mm-hmm. back in the day. So he is going to be remembered always for winning.
Dude, that's a statue.
Yeah, for winning Philadelphia Super Bowl. So, man, get as much money as you can. Yeah. I'm never going to be mad at a player, anybody, for going out and getting what you worked hard for. That's the American dream, regardless to what anybody else says, because, you know, it's funny. People get in their fandom talking about, well, he's hurting the team. How is he hurting the team? Your whole motivation in life is to work hard and get rewarded for the hard work that you do. Go get rewarded. Go get rewarded for it, man, for real.
Yeah, he is going to get rewarded because there are going to be teams out there. We'll now have Nick Foles out in free agency alongside guys like Joe Flacco and Teddy Bridgewater. And so there are going to be some teams bidding on these quarterbacks, and he's going to get a deal. The problem with Nick Foles as a quarterback is, yes, he is a legend in Philadelphia. He took him to a Super Bowl win. We get all that. But he had been a streaky guy. I mean, he had 1 year where he threw 27 touchdowns with two interceptions. It was great. Everybody loved Nick Foles. And then he's been kind of – there's good Nick Foles and bad Nick Foles. Good Napoleon Dynamite and bad Napoleon Dynamite. I mean, and so he's a real streaky kind of quarterback. And so if you're going to pick him up, if your team gets him, you got to hope he's, you know, good Nick Foles and not bad Nick Foles. So that's one part of this story. The other part is Carson Wentz's health. And, Hugh, I got to tell you, when it first came out that there was a problem with Carson Wentz as a person inside the locker room, I kind of went, eh, because his teammates came to his defense. Then it comes out again, and he addresses it and says, I got to be a better person. There's a problem with Carson Wentz in that locker room to some degree. I don't know how deep it is, but there's a problem.
Well, again, I've heard that before about him. I didn't know how true it was. As a matter of fact, I talked to some people from Philadelphia during Radio Row, and they were adamant that they said the story was a bunch of malarkey. But for him to come out and say he has to be a better person, there must have been some folks he rubbed the wrong way. No question about that. And I look at it more so as the team responded to Nick Foles. They responded to him in the playoffs. They played their butts off in the playoffs. It could be one of those things, man. Quarterbacks are standoffish anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the nature of the position. You have some that are better teammates than others. But you had, like, just think about like this. Seattle Seahawks, they had a trouble with Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
The Legion of Boom. And that's why they got most of them most of those cats up out of there. Richard Sherman had a trouble with Russell Wilson. They got him up out of there. So, yeah.
Aaron Rodgers got his coach up and out of there.
Yeah, after a while. But I haven't, like, as a teammate, I don't think I've heard too much negative about Aaron Rodgers as a teammate. Has anybody heard anything? I haven't heard anything negative about him. So, yeah, it's one of those things. Quarterbacks are different. Quarterbacks are a different breed.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. This offseason is going to be filled with big names, you know, not the least of which, of course, is Le'Veon Bell and others that potentially could be traded or moved or, you know, stand by, especially with so many new coaches who are seeing bright, shiny objects out there. When you get a new coach, like Brian Flores now in Miami and Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, why am I the only one that thinks of Zach Taylor? Look, I want Zach Taylor to be a success because he was a quarterback at my college. He's a Husker. But I looked at Zach Taylor and thought, man, there are, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, Hugh, some of these teams at some point in this Sean McVay home run thing are going to be reaching. I mean, really reaching. And I wish the best for Matt LaFleur in Green Bay and Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, Cliff Kingsbury down in Arizona, but none of these guys have even sniffed a head coaching thing at any level, and suddenly you're going to make him the head coach in the NFL.
It's the new trend in the NFL. He's 35 years old. You look at what Coach McVay was able to do, and that's what coach is looking for, the next guy that's going to be able to connect with these young players.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he got the shot. We'll see how it works out. We definitely will.
Yeah, no, it's a
and I would venture to say in Cincinnati, knowing how cheap they are as far as paying head coaches, that he probably is not making a grip. Like, he's making good money for a head NFL coach, but he's not making nearly as much as like you know, probably say the Cleveland coach is making or something like that. They don't pay in Cincinnati as far as coaches are concerned.
You know, and being what it is, the NFL, and I think we all understand this too, the NFL is a trendy thing. You know, it's sort of like pop culture and everything's trendy. You know, so the trendy thing is to get your Matt LaFleur, your Zach Taylor, your Cliff Kingsbury, guy that doesn't have any experience doing the job whatsoever, and hand him the reins and hope that he just hits like Sean McVay did, and it may work out. I mean, all of those guys have one thing in common. Well, besides being young, they're quarterback guys. I mean, they're quarterback coaches. They were quarterbacks.
The quarterback whisperer.
Yeah, right, exactly. Just like McVay, played quarterback and is a quarterback whisperer. You know, Taylor, quarterback. You know, everybody says, well, you know, Zach Taylor, quarterback coach of the LA Rams. I'm going to be in the minority here as to telling you, I think that going forward, that history will say that Jared Goff is a very average NFL quarterback. I watched him in the Super Bowl and said, man, this is not – I just think he's an average NFL quarterback at best.
I just think that's kind of a shame that that's how it went from him being potentially, you know, a really good quarterback to one game defining him in his career. I don't think he's that bad. I think that he went up against one of the better coaches in the NFL. And he, you know, every quarterback has flaws. He just wasn't able to overcome his. Tom Brady had flaws. Nobody's talking about how Tom Brady struggled in the first half as well. The only reason they broke through is when Sony Michel scored. And nobody talks about that. They talk about, you know, how, you know, he looked lost or whatever. Both of them looked lost in the first half. If you really break the game down, there was no offense in the first. It was 3-3 in the first half. So that to me says that both quarterbacks were struggling. But it's just – 3-0 first half. But that it's amazing to me how all of a sudden Jared Goff is terrible.
Well, and again, I see nothing in it. I mean, I compare him to the other guys that I think are going to be. I mean, Patrick Mahomes changes the landscape because he is such a
– And he went toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes is a, you know, kind of a game-changing kind of quarterback. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, all these guys are quarterback whispers, but, you know, being the trend that in the NFL, this is either going to see, you'll see a lot of Sean McVays pop up in places where they'll have, you know, they'll be able to take Josh Rosen to the next level, or you'll be able to take, I don't know how you take Aaron Rodgers to the next level if you're Matt LaFleur, or, you know, you do something with the ginger assassin in Cincinnati that he hadn't already done. But, you know, you look at what Frank Reich, former quarterback, right? Frank Reich played quarterback in the NFL. He's now a head coach, and he was able to, you know, kind of help resurrect the career of Andrew Luck. So this is kind of the new thing now, is to get quarterbacks to coach quarterbacks instead of defensive gurus. Miami flies in the face of that by going in into defensive guy like Atlanta did with Dan Quinn. But we'll see what the next trend is. This will either work with all these young coaches, or they'll scrap it, Hugh, and they'll go back to the Mike Singletaries of the world and try and build with defense.
Maybe. It all depends. In this era of offenses, high-flying offenses, I think it's going to skew more offense than anything. I mean, it all balances out, because it balanced out in the Super Bowl where defenses came up, and they came up big. You know, good defense coordinators, they came out and they showed what they're worth at this level. So I think it's going to balance out. But I think right now the offense trend – the trend is offensive coaches right now. And I think that trend is going to stay that way for a while.
Yeah, and Brady, you're right. I mean, Brady has one excuse. He's like an old dude. He's like an old guy, you know.
And old guy with 5 Super Bowls.
Yeah, it was 6. Yeah, and right, isn't it going to be interesting to watch Tom Brady next year to see if he is slowing down? I mean, it is just, yeah, right? I mean, at some point he's got to, you would think. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. It's amazing. I know. We have a lot going on when it comes to the Falcons. We're certainly going to be monitoring things that come out of Flowery Branch today and discussion all day about
– see who's going to get cut. Yeah, who's going to get some cut. Money taken from them.
Right.
Or adjusted, some money adjustments.
Yeah, the fact is the Falcons have a lot of big decisions to make. All right, so we mentioned Tom Brady. Brady made a comment yesterday that he doesn't like being called something. And we have that audio. We're going to play it for you next. And don't mistake Tom Brady for somebody else either. Okay? Just saying. Hey, Rick and John, you can't mistake them. They're going to be at Twin Peaks and Buckhead on Friday from 10 to 2. Start your weekend the right way up there at Peachtree in Piedmont with John and with Rick and John. We're not going to be there. It's too early. Rick and John, 10 to 2. Have lunch in Buckhead at Twin Peaks with Rick and John. We continue next. Do you hear the story? Did you see the meme about the woman who misidentified Tom Brady? It's pretty funny. It's next with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now streaming anywhere on radio.com and the radio.com app.
We are killing it online.
Stay up to date with Atlanta sports no matter where you go. Streaming live now at radio.com and the radio.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. John and Hugh from the Kia Studios on a very busy Wednesday. We're going to get back to chopping up a lot of the stuff that is Atlanta sports here in just a moment. Well, I guess this is Atlanta sports too, because Tom Brady just won a Super Bowl here in Atlanta. Another one. And so we scrape all the Patriots stuff off our sidewalks and off our scrape, you know, get rid of that, bleach that out of our stadium, and remember that. Now, Tom Brady, of course, was six, you know, greatest quarterback of all time and whatnot. But apparently, Tom Brady doesn't like being called that particular word.
Yeah, it makes me cringe.
Yeah, it makes me cringe. He doesn't like being called the GOAT. Well, if you are, you know, I mean, of course, you know, there are certain one national talk show host who went on a rant this week. Tom Brady is not the GOAT. He's not Montana. I mean, Montana's the GOAT. Montana's the greatest quarterback of all time. Don't you tell me that Joe Montana. I mean, he just went on and on.
What?
Yeah, Mike Francesa just lit up a caller over the fact that the caller said that Brady was the best quarterback of all time. He's certainly the most productive. Who has six, right?
Nobody. No quarterback. Nobody.
And it may make him cringe you because, you know, that's a, you know, I mean, you don't want to be, you know, hanging around Peyton Manning. Oh, so you're the GOAT. You know, I mean.
People know it. Listen, John, whether you want to say it or not, it's a pecking order to this thing called football. It just is. You remember, like in that commercial when Barry Sanders, remember the commercial, Barry Sanders running, and he walked past Emmitt said, y'all know I got more yards than him. I mean, it's just one of the things. Even when we saw Emmitt on Radio Row, I yelled at him all the time because I remember when we went to Dallas Stadium, he had a Lamborghini, blue Lamborghini, Dallas blue. And on the back of the plate, it said all time. That because he's the all-time leading rusher. So it's one of those things that, I mean, some nicknames you've earned. Like the GOAT, he shouldn't be. Listen, ain't nobody going to dispute the, well, you might have a few people that are not that bright that might do that. It might want to throw Joe Montana into that lump. But, dude, in this day and age, you're measured by championships. You're measured by how many championships you win. He got six.
Mm-hmm.
He just surpassed Charles Haley. So, yeah, you're the GOAT. Yeah, you've been to nine. Damn near probably going to go to 10. Let's just speak that into existence. Probably is going to go to 10. Don't know if he's going to win it or not. But he'll probably be represented in the Super Bowl next year. Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, just a little bit. And so, you know, Tom Brady's fairly well known, right? I mean, he's fairly well known.
You would think so.
You would think so. I mean, he's everywhere. He's the GOAT and all this. And yet we have something, Wendy, that you have posted on our – on our at 99 Twitter about Tom Brady in a way, I guess in a manner of speaking, right? I mean, it's because it's gone viral.
In a somewhat kind of way, because Cynthia Bailey from The Real Housewives of Atlanta, she's been on that show for a while, posted an Instagram photo, said she mistook this guy for Tom Brady who was hanging out at the St. Regis. And we retweeted the photo along with the article about it, and he looks nothing like Tom Brady.
Yeah, we all make, you know, mistakes. The Lord knows we make our share here, Hugh, right? I mean, every day, right? But, you know, you try not to put them out into where they become viral.
She admitted it. She posted her mistakes, so it was fun.
Yeah, but this is the thing that I thought was kind of weird, if you will, is that she dates Mike Hill. Like, Mike Hill is a reporter for Fox. He's a sports analyst for Fox, worked at ESPN. He's made it no secret that they've been dating for a long time. I would think, now, she made fun of it, and this is not me trying to, you know, bash her or anything, but if that's my woman and I'm in the sports realm, most women would ask their boyfriend, their significant other, hey, who is this? I mean, because it happened all week down at Radio Row. People say, hey, when it was talking to the guy, hey, who is that? Who is that? You're just being inquisitive. She posted a picture of a dude and didn't even ask her boyfriend. And he even said in his post, he was like, I'm going to need you as your sports analyst boyfriend to, if you meet somebody, to basically, you know, ask me first.
By me.
So that's on Mike.
Well, she included the screen grabs, so she did text him. So
yeah.
She included the screen grabs of their text exchange back and forth with her boyfriend asking, hey, is this Tom Brady? So she still posted it, even though he said, no, honey, that is not Tom Brady.
Yeah, and he asked in the picture, did you post it already? I think he even asked in the screen grab, did you post it already? Which, like I said, like she had fun with it, but you're supposed to be able to ask that question, man. Come on. Hey, babe, who is this? I don't know who the hell that is.
But this is the thing that I found strange about it all. I mean, Tom Brady is a celebrity, and if you don't know about Tom Brady, you should know about his wife. So these Real Housewives consider themselves somewhat quasi-celebrities.
So. And she's a model, so she should know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she's a real model. I think she had fun. She was having fun with.
Have you guys ever run up against somebody who you thought it was and it wasn't?
Well,
that
yeah,
person?
But not famous, but yeah. I mean, no. Sure. I mean, I stood and talked to a high school friend of mine for 15 minutes, not real light because when he was in high school, he weighed 120 pounds soaking wet. And by the time I saw him again 30 years later, he weighed like 3.5, you know?
No, I've done that before.
And so I asked him, I said, hey, have you seen Mike Wilson? And he looked at me and goes, dude, I am Mike Wilson. And I went, oh my God.
I've done that before. Now, I've had conversations with people that they'd be like, yo, man, what's going on? Did it? And I'm sitting there and I'm trying to remember who they are. And to play it off, I'll ask somebody to ask who they are, and I still probably won't remember. But I haven't had one of those where, you know, I'm thinking it's one person, but it's really not them. I don't think I've had one of those. No.
I mean, well, I guess from a distance I've seen people that look like celebrities. You go, is that so-and-so? And then you have to kind of, you know, get up close to see them to see whether or not it is.
Yeah, I wouldn't post it.
I wouldn't post it. No.
That guy didn't come close to looking
right. I mean, it's not like it's here. And it's on our Twitter, at 929 The Game. If you want to see the picture, I mean, tell me that this looks like Tom Brady. I mean, you can be, you know, persuaded that, you know, there's some lookalikes that float around. Because, you know, if you've ever been to Hollywood and you've ever been to Hollywood and Vine outside I guess it's now the Kodak Theater, used to be the Grauman Chinese Theater, right, Daryl? Yeah, that one. You have all the people that dress up as the characters, right? I mean, the R2-D2 or Darth Vader or whatnot, you know, for all the Star Wars, all the characters. There are lookalikes that are out there, right? And some of them are pretty close.
But I'm just wondering why he would have been roaming around the St. Regis, Tom Brady, randomly roaming around the St. Regis.
No, and that wasn't even the host hotel. Like, and normally.
He could have had some work at the St. Regis.
Well, he probably, his wife, we could, honestly, his wife probably could have was staying there. He could have been there for that reason. But I will say this, during the Super Bowl, you have a certain amount of time that's allotted to you. It's kind of, you're kind of restricted, and it's hard to move around. So, you know, there's
I was
that.
Upgraded a seat on an airline because they thought I was Jermaine Dupri, and I said nothing. I said nothing. They put me right in first class, and I took that seat.
That's their fault.
It was their fault because I am much handsome and taller. Praise God. I love you, JD.
Get that first class upgrade.
Hey, I got that upgrade, though. Thanks, JD.
There you go. A lot going on. Of course, there was a big a media event last night with the State of the Union. I'm not a big fan of the State of the Union address. I got bored with them 25 years ago. Oh, there's my guy over here, and I did this, and I did that. I just don't think that there's a whole lot of there in those State of the Union addresses, no matter who's giving them. That's not my opinion about any particular president, you know, Clinton, Obama, Trump, or anything. So we thought we would kind of just spin this a little bit, which is, what is your Atlanta sports State of the Union as it surrounds our major franchises? What kind of state are they in? Give you our thoughts on that as we continue next. John and Hugh on the Morning Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.